Mission in Perth.
Renee Pettit-Shipp is an award-winning writer who lived in the Indian Ocean Territories from 2011 to 2014. Her work with asylum seekers inspired her first collection of poetry, The Sky Runs Right Through Us, published by UWA Publishing in 2018, and was shortlisted for the inaugural Dorothy Hewitt Manuscript Prize and won the 2018 WA Premier's Literary Award for the Emerging Writer. Renee currently lives and writes in Western Australia's Great Southern and dropped by the studios at RTR-FM during a busy National Refugee Week to chat about her latest book. RTR-FM's Danae Gibson asked Pettit-Shipp to explain the title, The Archipelago of Us.
It's my response to Island Australia. So I guess Island Australia quickly becomes Fortress Australia. So The Archipelago of Us is a more fluid and a more nuanced understanding of who we are as a nation.
I think a lot of us think of, you know, girt by sea. Mm. I do slip that in when I can. and the mainland. We're very focused on the big chunk of Australia. We don't think much of Tasmania or the islands off the northeast coast. And very few Australians would probably know about the Northwest Archipelago.
Mm.
Why do you know about it? How does Christmas Island and Cocos Islands come into your life?
So I moved to Christmas Island in 2011 to teach children in detention, and it was something that changed my life. And I didn't go over there to write. I went over there to teach. But what I saw unsettled my belief in Fair Go Australia so much that I had to find a way to write about what I saw. And I went to the Cocos Keeling Islands for 2 years after that, and it was there that I wrote the collection of poetry, The Sky Runs Right Through Us, and that won the Premier's Award, happily, for an emerging writer. But what I found is I felt like I was describing the tip of an iceberg, and even though that book did well and it gave me a lot of space to speak about some of the things I'd seen, I needed to really unpack and understand what I'd seen. So The Archipelago of Us is part of a doctoral thesis, and I went back and interviewed about 13 people on the islands and really tried to understand what was happening out in that marginal world.
Should I be calling you Dr. Pettit-Shipp?
You can if you want.
Because it's done, and so you're publishing part of what was your thesis.
That's
into
right.
What was...
It's a work of non-fiction. So it was always intended for a general audience, so kind of very much put the academic stuff in a bracketed bit, and this is very much just trying to... I'm trying to be the eyes of the everyday Australian, because I don't believe if the everyday Australian saw what I saw that they would think that that was okay.
We don't understand because we can't see it often.
Correct.
I think.
And that's deliberate.
Yeah. So why did you go there? Did you were digging into that sore spot particularly?
I was teaching migrant children and asylum seeker children, refugee children at Beaconsfield Primary School in Fremantle.
Okay, so you're in that space, so
yeah,
to speak.
But I just wanted to do more. You know, I knew the kids that I taught had already experienced some racism, so I thought if I can, you know, be with those kids the minute they step off the boat and make them feel welcome and make them feel safe, I thought that I could make a difference. But I think what has been so challenging for me is I really did think Australia was a compassionate country. Mm. I believed that it wasn't perfect and having children in detention was not great, but I believed that the intention was to still act in an ethical way. And I guess what I saw over there was children who had been in detention so long without even a playground, some of them not even going to school, is that they stopped wanting to play. Like 10-year-old kids no longer being able to play, some of the kids stopped wanting to eat. In Northwest Point, where the young men were detained, there was 12 attempted suicides or incidences of self-harm every single day.
Wow.
So that's why I needed to write the book, because people don't know this. And, our current government has just renewed the contract for Nauru for 10 years, so it's fantastic they just about have everyone off Nauru, but they've signed that deal for another 10 years, you know, and that concerns me. There's nothing to stop us detaining children on Nauru.
And how many children are there? I mean, one's too many, but how many were there when you were there?
Oh, it just changed. It was constantly in flux, and that was another difficult thing. Mm. So I would come to school one day and I would have 15 kids, and I'd come to school the next day and I'd have 5. you know, you weren't given a role. Your relationships were deliberately, they kept changing things on you all the time, so you couldn't form too close of relationships, and you didn't know where those children went. So, yeah, and I taught the unaccompanied young minors, so unaccompanied males who'd come from Afghanistan and Iran, and they didn't have their families. You know, often families could only afford to send one person over. And I would see the guards deliberately separate those young men from their friends, and it's all that they had. So they'd go, right, you're leaving tomorrow, you go back to your dorms, and they'd just never see each other again. So there was this really punitive kind of behaviour that I witnessed out there.
It sounds very similar to the policies and practices of stolen generations, of that separation. You can't know that you're taken from your family, and you can't know your family or people that are similar to you.
Yes, the whole thing of a camp, it creates these excised zones where our basic human rights are suspended, and so it allows these things to happen, where the rules change with inside the wire, and that's what's so concerning.
How long did you stay? A couple of years?
So I was 1 year on Christmas Island, and then, I had a friend attempt suicide by drinking cleaning fluids that I had been taking out of detention regularly, and I just think I reached a point where I felt like I was trying to hold up a damn wall of, you know, suffering coming towards me with a Band-Aid, and I thought, I can't, this is too much for anybody. And so that's when we moved to the Cocos Keeling Islands, and we were there for 2 years. And that was an incredible place to live. So beautiful, so biodiverse. You know, you'd be swimming alongside enormous turtles and, tiger sharks. Yeah, it was so beautiful. And so it was a great place to write the poetry collection.
It's a very basic question. Has writing helped you heal?
It's a great question, and yes. But I think healing comes from understanding too. And so at first it all felt very personal. So to separate out the personal from the political, from the larger picture, and also to go back and understand the history of Christmas Island and not really understanding the indentured Chinese labour that happened out there and the cruelty of those conditions until quite recently, you know, with the British Phosphate Commission. So it made me realise when people are out of sight and out of mind, it creates the possibilities for exploiting people or not addressing their human rights. And actually, you know, it was fascinating interviewing some of the Chinese Christmas Islanders and to find out that there was apartheid essentially on Christmas Island until 1970, really. So if you went to the cinema, you know, all the white people sat on one side and all people from Malay or Chinese descent had to sit on another side. There was a separate swimming pool for white people and for Chinese people. And if you were a Chinese people, the place where you swam in the swimming pool was actually the cooling machines for the phosphate mining that was happening there. So the water would get dirtier and dirtier over the course of the day. This is the late 60s.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I think these stories are really important, you know, and oral stories are powerful. So it felt like a real privilege to just be able to go over there and interview people and get some of those stories down.
Dr. Pettit-Chip, why is it called the Christmas Island?
I think it was discovered on Christmas Day from memory. Yeah, quite straightforward. Yeah.
Nothing quite so colonial as...
Oh, what day is it?
Imposing all those structures onto it. What is your hope for sharing the archipelago of us?
My hope is first and foremost visibility and humanity. So for people to, I'm just saying, here I am working alongside this 8-year-old who's painting a picture. Be with me. Be with her. Know her name. You know her story. And I think just that sense of shared humanity, she's just an 8-year-old, like any 8-year-old, you know, but yet with these extraordinary experiences. So I think to rehumanise, whereas like we're talking with offshore islands, everything has been done to dehumanise. But that happened with the poetry too. What I needed with the nonfiction was to really spell out really specifically what is troubling about what happens there. So my hope is to quite literally apply pressure to the current government for us to radically change the way that we go about treating asylum seekers. And basically, my commitment is that I won't stop speaking about this until mandatory detention ends.
What would be the first thing you'd do if you had all the power that you needed?
Well, I just think end mandatory detention. Sure, if you need to detain people for a month while you check their background and check that they're safe to come in, that would be the first and foremost thing. And then I think a regional processing centre, say in Indonesia, where people are fleeing countries, they will come. You know, if you were going to die in your homeland or be raped in your homeland on the basis of race, you will flee. So we need somewhere where we go, okay, you've come to Indonesia, so you don't have to get on a boat. We will process you, you know, even if it's within 6 months, you know. And then there is a safe solution that we bring you to Australia. So a responsible way of working with other countries to create a regional solution. I mean, I guess a lot of this can also seem quite bleak, but I was very aware in writing the work that I needed to keep the reader with me. And I wanted to be very honouring of the humanity of the reader as well. So there's a very deliberate decision within my book to describe a lot of beauty. And I believe that deep hope resides where we see life thrive. So I try to write, you know, there's on Christmas Island, you can swim out 50 metres and the seafloor drops straight down 3 kilometres. Wow. And it is so beautiful. And there's plate corals and there's manta rays and there's, you know, moray eels popping their heads up behind plate corals. It's extraordinary. So I try and hold all of the beauty